Hour number two of the Weekend Huddle, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game National Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Fun hour of the first. We talked a lot of college football. Lane Kiffin, where will he end up? Talked a little bit of Vanderbilt. What will it take to get them into the college football playoff? We'll shift gears here for just a moment as we talk a little bit of Nashville Predators hockey. And to do that, we welcome in our good friend Max Hurst from Preds Radio on the line with us, who was on the call last night. Preds get the victory over the Chicago Blackhawks 4-3. It's a fun one last night. Max, how's it going?
Morning, boys. Thank you for having me. Good to be back home. Looking forward to being in a Saturday night in Smashville tonight, and want to give you guys some props because you've been working hard this week, and Connor was producing the game until 11 o'clock last night, and then here he is right back on the radio, and I'm sitting at home talking to you guys. So thank you for working harder than I am.
Well, you're welcome. I'm just kidding. It's an honor to have you on. So we'll start right there. Preds with a big win last night against Chicago. The offense looks wildly different than it did the first couple weeks of the season. They look like they're clicking on all cylinders. What's gone right for the offense so far?
It's gotten really simple, and I think the key for me is they're doing things that bring everybody in. And I need to look at some of the puck tracking data, because I feel like Steven Stamkos had the puck more in these two games than he did at any point in the season until now. And I think that really matters. And when you play with Ryan O'Reilly, good things are going to happen to you. And they made a conscious switch to take Philip Forsberg off of Ryan O'Reilly's line for really the first time this season, put Stamkos on that left wing spot. Evangelista rides with them on the right wing, and having those guys makes Evangelista so much better too. So I think that line's a good example. I think Forsberg and Holla have played really well together as the new second line this week. Last night they had Matt Wood with them, which is great, and Wood just brings so much. Wednesday they had Marchessault with them, and Marchessault didn't play yesterday because of an injury. So I think things have fallen into place a little bit, and after a couple weeks where they were able to keep the lines the same, things went a little stale. So see how long they can ride this for, but stability is much needed. They've been generating so much, and the third period Wednesday in Detroit, they were down 2-1 coming in, ended up winning 6-3. That was a 5-goal period, and that period would have been the Predators' highest scoring game of the season in one period. So the bar is low, but the scoring has been there these last two games, and they got rewarded with two wins in front of two sellout crowds, in front of two teams that have been playing decently well. And for the fans, you got to love it because it's the Red Wings and the Blackhawks.
Yeah, two rivals, one of old and one of new. They are in action tonight against another rival in the division, the Winnipeg Jets, for Saturday night in Smashville. So I want to focus in on a player last night that came up in kind of a big moment for the offense. Reed Schaefer yesterday made his debut for the Predators. I thought he played well. He didn't record any stats, but he looked like he was able to move the puck. He looked pretty fluid in the offense, kind of getting adjusted to the fast-paced speed of the NHL. What can Preds fans expect from Schaefer moving forward?
It was funny because it didn't feel like Schaefer played a lot. Like, it felt like three shifts a period, but he ended up with 12 shifts and over 10 minutes of ice time, and he played a lot in the third. Like, he played meaningful minutes in a one-goal game and a two-goal game down the stretch, and he got regular shifts with Fedor Svechkov and Tyson Jost. So I think the Preds are going to give him a shot to stick. I imagine he will play again tonight. I don't know that for sure, but I can tell you that the Predators did include his parents on the flight back from Chicago, which was very kind of them. So his parents, Lindsay and Jeremy Schaefer, are here for the game tonight, and I don't know if they would have done that if they didn't think he was going to play. So Schaefer looked solid. He held his own. He needs to be a little bit more physical, but as he gets used to the NHL game, that'll happen. And he brings a size element, a net front element with some speed and skill, and the Preds need all of those things. So he was a pretty good fit with Fedor Svechkov last night. I think Tyson Jost is a good soldier and a Swiss Army knife and somebody who can fit with anybody. So I think he was a good surprise third piece in that line in a game where he wasn't originally supposed to play. So I think Schaefer can get some extended run here. The Preds are in a stretch where they're playing teams that are not at the top of the league, which is a good time to bring Schaefer in to debut against the Blackhawks, tonight, yeah, the Jets have some firepower, but they've lost four in a row. Connor Hellebuck is out. This is not the toughest version of the Jets that the Preds have seen these last few years. And then Tuesday night, the Flames, who are next to the Preds for last place in the entire NHL. So it's a good stretch to give Schaefer some ice time here, maybe try some different things with him, and who knows, maybe give him a shift or two on the power play if things go well.
Yeah, Max Scherzer is with us here on the Weekend Huddle. Nick Frazier, Connor Newt. Just curious, Max, looking at this Preds team, now that there is some stability out of the back with Roman Josi and Nick Hague, it seems like they're starting to click on all cylinders going forward with UC Saros as well.
Yeah, it's been interesting because I think Josi has been great since he got back from injury, but I actually don't think Hague has been very good, which has been surprising. And they're going to need a little more time to get the chemistry down. But last night, Josi had another really good game. He's been back for four games now, and it's gone really well. He's had no rust, so I think that's been great. I think Hague is still learning how to play with him. Like, it's not automatic to play with Josi. We couldn't just throw anybody out there with him, even though he's a great player. So I think that'll take a little bit of time for Hague. I think he was better last night, but in Detroit, he had some struggles. Last night, the Shea and Perbix pair was really good, and they had kind of dipped a little bit recently. So it was good to see those guys bounce back to have one of their better games, especially Brady Shea was in a ton of passing lanes, did a lot of big penalty killing, and was out there for some huge defensive shifts in that game. And then the third pair is to me, the fun pair, the speed package, Blankenberg and Stastny. I mean, Nick Blankenberg is making his case to be the team MVP here. With all he's doing, he's scoring goals, he's joining the rush, he's playing D, he's at the point on the power play, he's killing penalties as a forward, he's scoring massive goals, and it's the same as last year. Once he gets his shot, all he does is make the team over and over and over again and keep proving his worth. So the decor is pretty good. I don't think they've really been the problem at any point this season. The problem has been goal scoring. So I like where they're at, and I think Willsby and Barron are just sitting and waiting, and I think you have a clear six guys right now, like you said.
And you speak on the goal scoring, another youngster in Matthew Wood. Your thoughts on him so far this season?
Oh, he's amazing. He's blown everybody's expectations away completely. And he has 7 goals now in 17 games. He's 1 goal behind Matthew Schaefer from the Islanders for the rookie goal lead. First of all, when you're 1 goal behind the number 1 overall pick for the rookie goal lead, that's pretty good. When you've played 8 fewer games than he has, and at least 6 fewer games than everybody else in the top 10, that's really, really, really good. So Wood is finishing, and he actually hadn't had a point in 5 games coming into last night. I didn't think he was playing poorly, but since he had that hat trick against the Rangers 3 weeks ago, he hadn't had a goal, he hadn't had an assist, but he gets his looks, he blows the zone, Preds were able to stretch the Blackhawks out, gets a long bank pass from Nick Hague, and just absolutely rips one high glove on Arvid Soderblom last night for the Preds' first goal. So Wood is in really, really good shape. And it's been fun getting to know him and kind of learning what makes him tick. He's a pretty serious guy. He's 20 years old. He's tall. He's still growing into his body. But he's also a coach's son. So he has this, like, authentic one game at a time, one shift at a time mentality that almost sounds like it's cliche when he says it in basically every interview we do with him. But it's actually like how he looks at the game, and he's not messing with us. Like, this is how he looks at the game. His dad was a college hockey coach and a skills coach, and it's just the way Matt Wood sees the game. Like, yeah, I had a hat trick last game, but the next game is more important, stuff like that. So he's like so locked in, and he talks like a 50-year-old coach, and he's a tall, lanky 20-year-old. So he's been really fun to get to know, and I've said this a couple times on the radio, but lots of folks probably haven't heard it yet. The Preds told him last week, right when they got back from Sweden, you're sticking around. Go ahead and find a place to live in Nashville. So Matt Wood is here, and the Preds hope he's never going anywhere other than the Preds ever again.
And it feels wrong having a player on this roster that I am finally older than, so that's a good accomplishment for me. Max Scherzer is with us.
Hey, good for you, Connor. You're getting old, buddy.
Max Hurst from Preds Radio is here with us. Max, last one for you. Tonight, Saturday night in Smashville, the Predators taking on the rival Winnipeg Jets. Seems like big juice. Justus Onanen is going to be in net for the Predators tonight. What's the key to victory tonight for a W over the Jets?
Yeah, I would expect big juice tonight after Saros started one last night, and they gave both goalies a start on the road trip, and both goalies won. And that was Onanen's first win of the season in six starts. So he needed that. He played well. He'd had the net come off on him, all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. And, well, when you need a win, you need a win. So he got a win. A couple big things for the Jets. They have lost four in a row. They are really not playing well right now. And a lot of that is because Connor Hellebuck is out. He is hurt. He is not here. So it is going to be their whimsical little leprechaun-y looking backup, Eric Comrie, getting the go tonight, who is one of NHL Twitter's favorite players. Preds have faced him before. They've beaten him a couple times each of the last two seasons. They started their organizational number three in Carolina yesterday for his NHL debut, Thomas Milic. It was his first NHL game. They ended up losing 5-1, but it was a closer game than that makes it sound. One of the goals was an empty netter. They also gave up a goal after the empty netter, so it was really a 3-1 game. But the Jets only had 13 shots on goal in that entire game against the Hurricanes yesterday. So they're down. They've lost four in a row. A couple of former Preds coming back in for the first time tonight. Luke Shen has been a healthy scratch for every game of the Jets' four-game losing streak. So I feel like they'll probably play him tonight. And Gus Nyquist as well is playing in their top six. So a couple of guys who the Preds traded away at the deadline last year return. But yeah, Jets are really struggling. The Preds are the hotter team. It's going to be a full house Saturday night in Smashville, Thanksgiving weekend. Looking forward to seeing Dr. Crane there and looking forward to seeing everybody there for what should be a fun one tonight at 6.
Indeed, should be a fun one. He's Max Herz of Preds Radio. Pre-game tonight at 5:30 to correspond with Vanderbilt coverage as they take on Tennessee, and the puck drop at 6 against the Winnipeg Jets. Max, appreciate the time, and we'll be listening to you tonight.
Yeah, of course, guys. And we actually made a little bit of a timing change, too, from that, Connor. We're going to start the pregame show at 5:45.
Okay.
So because it's hockey night in Canada, the game doesn't actually start till 6:15. And the Preds have been very flexible with us, so we thank them for that with all these Vanderbilt games that have been at 2:30. If tonight's game were at 7, we'd be able to air the whole Vandy game. If you want to hear the entire Vandy game, I would suggest just staying on 94.9 The Fan the whole time. We will cut at 5:45 from the Vandy game to Preds. And I don't know, unless Vandy has a drive that lasts an entire half, which we know for Vandy is possible. But unless that happens, I don't think the game is going to be over in 3 hours and 15 minutes. So 94.9 FM is your best bet for the Vandy game, and we'll have Preds as usual coming up tonight.
You heard the man. Programming note right there, Preds pregame at 5:45. Max, thank you.
Yeah, boys, keep up good work.
Thanks, Max.
We appreciate it. He's Max Herz of Preds Radio. Preds in action tonight in Smashville over at Bridgestone Arena tonight at 6 as they take on the Winnipeg Jets. We'll step aside, come back, break down that Vanderbilt game a little bit. What does Vandy need to do to get a big win over the Volunteers today? We'll do that coming up next right here on the Weekend Huddle on 102.5 The Game. Today is the day. If you're a Vanderbilt fan, today is the day that has been circled on the calendar all year long for both sides. The orange has got it circled, the black and gold has got it circled. This is a rivalry, folks, contrary to some popular belief. So buckle up. Welcome back in. Weekend Huddle here on 102.5 The Game. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton here with you. And we'll go right there. Today is the day for Vanderbilt. You're headed down to Neyland to take on Tennessee. What do they need to do? They got to win this game, first of all. Then they need some help. They got to have a lot of help if they want to get into the college football playoff. But let's just zero in on this game right here. Can Vanderbilt do what they haven't done against Josh Heupel? Heupel is 4-0 against Clark Lee. Can Vanderbilt take down the Vols and get just a little bit closer to the college football playoff?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is a Vanderbilt team that's, you know, changed their trajectory and how they plan for games. And Clark Lee has definitely instilled that in these guys. And primarily looking at how Clark Lee should, I guess, analyze this game, it should be more of the Vanderbilt of last year when they go up against teams like Texas and Alabama where they can manage the clock. Because, look, and Christian can attest to this because he's a Tennessee fan. You can attest to this as well because you're a college football fan. We all see how Josh Heupel plays. It's that up-tempo, fast-paced type thing.
Yeah.
Kind of straight away from it a little bit from the Hendon Hooker days, but still, it's up there.
It's two different styles of offense.
Well, I thought you were going to say bad clock management, but that's a whole other story.
Oh, no, I'll get there. But I think,
oh, we'll get there.
Yeah, we saw it in the Mississippi State game, trust me, and somehow they still won. Let's not frustrate.
God, we should be in a bowl game.
By the grace of God, we still won.
Yeah, just looking at that, Clark Lee should be able to kind of turn to the offensive side of the ball with Pavia, and I think Pavia knows, and I mentioned this throughout this week and last Saturday, Pavia needs to not turn this into a Heisman moment for him. He needs to continue being a team player and just continue managing the clock, because we've seen it. When you take him out of the game, this team's completely different on offense. I mean, not completely different, but there's a factor of the game that changes.
It's two different styles of offenses. Like you said, Heupel is the up-tempo. We'll throw it down the field, and then we'll run it on third and eight up the middle for some reason. But for the most part, it's pretty up-tempo, pretty pass-heavy. Vanderbilt can get electric, but Max joked about it earlier. They like to hold on to the ball. They like to keep the possession going for as long as they possibly can to drag some clock out. That's just how they play, and it obviously works for them. Two very different styles of offenses. On the defensive end, I don't think either team has a very good deep. Not very good. They're both good defenses, but it's going to be an offensive game today. Right. I think it's going to be high scoring. As Wesson Hermitage on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, what does Vanderbilt need to do to get a big win? Score more than 40. First team to 40 wins. I don't know if I go that far, but I think it's going to be pretty relatively close and pretty relatively high scoring. I would go 38-31.
I was going to say, you could talk me into 38-35, somewhere around there.
I would go in favor of the Vols today. That's just me. But
35-28.
Vanderbilt is very capable of winning this game. They're very capable of proving everyone wrong, as they've done all season. I would not be surprised if they do the very same thing today.
Yeah, last week when Vandy played Kentucky, I think it was Wes asked, well, what has Vandy got to do like for scoring purposes?
We don't have to talk about this part.
I'm just saying. I almost predicted the score on the nose. I said 45-17, and the score was 42-17.
Yeah.
So that just kind of.
I thought it was 45-17.
Maybe it was 45.
It might have been the opposite.
Yeah, I said 42. Excuse me. So today, 35-28 Vandy. That's where I'm at.
Really? Okay. Touchdown separation.
I will say I was talking to Frazier about this before the show. I cannot believe not necessarily that people think Vandy can win, but just how many like national people. I feel like I've not seen one person pick Tennessee to win this game that's like a national person. I don't know if I've just not seen it, but like I think Josh Pate picked Vandy. Pretty much everybody I've seen has just been picking Vandy. And like I get it, because I mean theoretically, you would think, okay, Vandy probably has more to play for here. But also, I mean, Tennessee doesn't want to lose at Neyland Stadium three times in one season.
Yeah.
All these seniors, you don't want to lose to Vanderbilt in your last game at Neyland Stadium. No, it doesn't matter how good Vanderbilt is. And I give Vanderbilt a ton of credit, because obviously this is the best Vanderbilt team of anybody's lifetime. So I give them a ton of credit for that. But I think if there's a narrative of Vandy has more to play for here, I think it's just a tad bit overblown. But that's just me.
Tennessee currently favored by 2.5. That is subject to move down or up. It could be both. But I just feel Tennessee's offense is more composed than Vanderbilt's. I think Vanderbilt has the better quarterback, obviously. But Tennessee's got Chris Brazel on their wide receiver room. I think he is good. I think he's silently been snubbed from Biletnikoff contention. And a lot of Vols fans are very upset about that. So I think today it's a matter of whose offense is more composed, who can get to the end zone quicker, obviously, and more frequently. But it's a matter of, can Joey Aguilar show that he is the star Tennessee fans make him out to be? Is he going to be Joey Aguilar of the Georgia game or Joey Aguilar of the Oklahoma game? That is the question. I think he's capable of being both. If he's Joey Aguilar of the Georgia game, I think the Vols win pretty handedly. If he's Joey Aguilar of Oklahoma and has three turnovers, it's going to be a day for the Vanderbilt fans. So it's going to be how each offense looks. The other question is, Diego Pavia delivering on the same level he's been delivering? He's not playing Kentucky anymore. No disrespect to my boys, but he's not playing Kentucky. He's not playing a team that's lesser than. This is a Vols team that has had this game circled for a long, long time. Ever since Diego Pavia went on that podcast and said, the state of Tennessee runs through Vanderbilt football now. So they've got that orange marker. They've circled today's date. They're ready to go. So I think this is going to be a battle of Who wants it more? Does Vanderbilt want to throw themselves in the conversation of college football playoff? You bet they do. Does Tennessee want to ruin that conversation? You bet they do. So it's going to be a matter of who's more composed and who wants it more.
Yeah, it's fair. Look, Vandy's got all the momentum in the world going into this game, and I'm sure Christian, being a Tennessee fan, is probably thinking Tennessee's got a really good chance at this.
But why you keep throwing him under the bus like that, man?
I'm not. I'm just saying.
I think he's just acknowledging that I do represent the Tennessee Volunteers here on this program. I think that's all it is.
Thank you very much. I didn't take any offense.
Well, we threw one out. We can throw another one out. Don't get a hothead.
I wasn't going to. Don't worry.
He's a polite gentleman.
I'd like to think of myself as a well-tempered Vol fan, unlike some other people.
Yeah. I mean, your mustache, it says different things. I mean, you're okay.
Don't come on here and try to tell me Dante Thornton deserves a Heisman consideration like someone did last year.
Wow.
Or sorry, it was Dylan Sampson.
He got snubbed from Doak Walker consideration, but not Heisman consideration.
Yeah, well, someone did that last year, and we – all three of us just absolutely ended his career.
To my point of what I'm saying about Vanderbilt, you sign your head coach to a six-year extension, or a new contract, however you look at it. Some people say extension, some say new contract. I'm just saying Vanderbilt has the momentum, all the momentum, not only as a football program but as an athletic program in general, winning with the battle for Atlantis yesterday. I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah.
This is a program right now that I'm sure Candace Story Lee is extremely – prideful in, and the fact that Vanderbilt has all the momentum going into Neyland. Simple as that. I mean, looking at guys like Eli Stowers and Diego Pavia, that connection, if I'm Clark Lee and company, run the ball once or twice, give a little RPO over the top to Stowers. This could be a game where Vandy can kind of spread the ball out for the most part. That's something that we've seen in years past with Vandy. Like I mentioned earlier with the Texas-Alabama game last year, both of those games, they spread them east to west, not north and south. I think Vanderbilt has the intangibles this year in a roster to where they can basically bully you east to west, but then put the knife right in your chest and go north to south.
That's how they play.
Yeah.
It is an east to west style of offense. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get involved in the conversation. How do you feel about this Vanderbilt team headed up to Neyland to take on the Volunteers of Tennessee? Let me tell you that our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, we'll flip it over to the other side. If the Vols knock off Vandy and eliminate them completely from college football playoff contention, how successful of a season is it if you're Josh Heupel? We'll discuss that coming up next. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton right here with you on the Weekend Huddle on 102.5 The Game.
Vanderbilt's going to run Tennessee after this year. Like, this is going to be the new staple of, like, college football's going to happen here at Vanderbilt.
Do any of you and the boys ever, like, talk about that? Like, we got to be the state school.
Well,
we're in Nashville, Tennessee. In the Music City. Like, we need to be the brand of Tennessee.
Everyone wants to come to Tennessee because of Nashville. So they want to come to Nashville. And then when we have, like, the most money in NIL, like, why not come here? So, like, we literally just have to win this year and throughout the rest of the year. It'll take care of itself.
You think Vandy will have the most money in the game?
I think we'll be up there.
Yeah.
But, like, it's Nashville.
Yeah, there's a lot of big hitters around here.
Yeah.
They just need a team to believe in.
There you go. That was Diego Pavia earlier this summer with some strong words directed towards the Volunteers. Apparently Vanderbilt's going to have the most NIL money in the history of the sport. We'll see. Welcome back in. Weekend Huddle here on 102.5 The Game. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton here with you. Going down the field, let's flip things over. If the Volunteers of Tennessee today knock off Vanderbilt, eliminate them completely from college football playoff contention, how successful of a season is it for Josh Heupel, knowing what we know? Knowing the Nico Iamaliava drama that transpired in the spring. Knowing the expectation change that happened throughout the season, how it was lower. Then they compete with Georgia and it becomes, Tennessee is a playoff lock. They have to be in. Then they lose to Oklahoma and are basically shut out. Knowing what we know about Tennessee, if they go in and beat Vanderbilt today, how successful of a season is it for Tennessee?
I kind of joked in the grid about this, but I think it's a I could care less if I'm Josh Heupel. I'm proud of what my guys have done, but at the same time, I'm moving on to next season. We go to a bowl game. If we go to the bowl game and win, that's great. That's always an accomplishment for every player that's a senior or a moving on to the bigger and better pastures at a professional level. But if I'm Josh Heupel looking at this Tennessee program, I'm going to the recruiting aspect and making sure we're solidifying our guys of the future and making sure money is being handed out to the guys that can help us for the future. So I'm not saying he's looking past Vandy right now, but that's kind of where my head would be at if I'm Josh Heupel as a coach for this Vanderbilt, a Tennessee team, excuse me.
I'm with you. I don't think you can look on the past today. You're focused on going 1-0 every week, and that's the cliche that every coach in the nation uses, but it's true. And this is a rivalry game. You want to beat your rival, and how sweet would it be to knock your rival completely out of CFP contention? Vanderbilt may already be out regardless, given what we know. Texas A&M lost last night, so they're probably going to move down. Georgia's in the SEC championship. Vanderbilt's got a lot to happen that needs to happen their way today.
And but, I'll tell you what's on. Sorry to cut you. I'll tell you what's on the line for Tennessee here today too. So I was talking about the senior class earlier. With a win against Vandy today and a win in the bowl game, this senior class will graduate averaging 10 wins a year.
Wow.
And who knows when the last time that happened was. Probably the 90s, maybe even longer than
probably
that.
Johnny.
Probably. Although he won criticism.
Or Fulmer.
It was probably Fulmer. But yeah, that's on the line today. And just – You like I said earlier, you just do not want to lose to Vanderbilt. No Tennessee team ever wants to lose to Vanderbilt. You definitely want to lose to this one that's talked as much as they have. And to their credit, they've backed 90% of it up. But Tennessee, no, there's no way that you want to lose this game. But if you do win this game today, we're talking about, you know, how this is a success for Tennessee, you know, going 9-3. That's right where I had them preseason.
Yeah.
I thought we'd go about 9-3.
It's right at the expectation.
I had the losses different. I thought we'd lose to Florida and beat Oklahoma, but you know, 9-3, I'd sign up for that. I would have signed up for that preseason. You know, it's disappointing looking back because you had two teams right in within reach to beat, with definitely Georgia and then Oklahoma a little bit as well.
Yeah.
But I'd have signed up for it preseason, so.
Yeah, it's a fair comparison, and it's a fair assumption to make. Contrary to what Diego Pavia believes, I still think Tennessee is the staple of college football in the state. Vanderbilt does not have the most NIL money in the country yet. I don't think they ever will. But I understand what he's doing there. He's just talking it up, trying to get his team hype, trying to get himself hype for this game. Tennessee hears that. They've got that circled. They're ready. And it's going to be pound the quarterback today. They're going to send on all cylinders. It's going to happen. It's a matter of, is Diego Pavia going to be the Diego Pavia he was against Tennessee last year? Or is he going to be what he was against Kentucky last week? There are two spectrums to the play of Diego Pavia. It's a matter of which one he can find. It's going to be hinging on victory for Vanderbilt. But on the Tennessee front, I think if they do knock Vanderbilt out of the college football playoff, I would label it a successful season. No, you didn't make the college football playoff, but you kept your rival from getting in. No, you didn't make the college football playoff, but you were close with the team that you had, and you lost a lot. You lost your quarterback you thought was the future. You brought in a random guy from Appalachian State who ended up being an all-SEC-level quarterback for you this year. I think if they are to knock Vanderbilt out, it's a successful season. Would I give it an A+? Absolutely not. I'd probably give it a B, B plus, but like he said, the expectation for Tennessee headed into this season, knowing everything we knew about them, was to go 9-3 or 8-4. Obviously, that expectation changed when they competed with Georgia, and we thought, oh, Tennessee might be able to lock themselves into the playoffs with this roster. And then they lose to Oklahoma, and we're right back to where we started. But I think if they exceed kind of the expectation that was set or meet it, by beating Vanderbilt today, I would consider it a successful season if I'm a Tennessee fan.
What gives you the, I guess, extra oomph to your statement there about Vandy not being the top dog in the state running things? Because, look, if Vandy ends up winning today, to me, I'd say that solidifies Jared Curtis as Vanderbilt's five-star quarterback commit, in my opinion. So going forward with that, how do you go on and say, yeah, I think Tennessee is over Vanderbilt still?
I think it's a sustained success for a long period of time. Vanderbilt, they've had a great season. They had a good season last year, but they still went 7-6. They've had a historical season this year. But I don't think 1 year dictates what level of staple you are in your specified state. It's like, let me compare this to the state of Kentucky. Kentucky is the staple of college basketball in that state. Louisville beat them this year. Does that mean Louisville runs things in the state of Kentucky for the foreseeable future? No. It's a sustained amount of success. And I think if you look at the all-time series between the two teams, it's heavily in favor of the Vols. And obviously there's been some clunkers in there of Vanderbilt teams and some clunkers of their in Tennessee fans.
Sure.
Or Tennessee teams, I should say. But sustained success, I think, is what creates magnitude of a program.
The narrative.
So, the narrative, right. Now, if Vanderbilt goes in and wins today, then that's a big win for a historical season. But I still wouldn't say, oh, yeah, they're the top dogs of this state so just yet.
You're saying it's a one-off.
I'm not saying it's a one-off because they're obviously building towards the future. If they flip Jared Curtis, then they're set up for success for a long period of time.
But I'm talking about for like Vanderbilt's – you're talking about like the sustained success. If they do win today and solidify Jared Curtis, again, is a big question mark, even though he's a five-star recruit.
His mom says go Dogs.
Well, we'll see about that afterwards. But like, well, we don't know what the future holds with Curtis as a quarterback for Vandy if he does commit. But my biggest thing is like, I don't know how you can be so sure. Because look, looking at Pavia, I think he has changed, and we both can agree on this, has changed the narrative of Vanderbilt athletics and also college football as a whole.
Absolutely.
And I think NIL has leveled out a lot of things when it comes to looking at programs that are better than each other. I mean, sure, you're going to have your power four schools like Alabama, Georgia, and so forth, those giant brands that have built an empire in some roundabout way. But to me, I think Tennessee and Vandy are a little bit on the same playing field right now.
Right now, in this, you know, in this season, I'd like to see life without Pavia. Can they sustain this level of success? And if they can, then we can have the conversation of, is Vanderbilt the heavy hitter in the state of Tennessee? But as of right now, I just feel it's the Vols. I think the sustained success, the wins they've had over the years, the level of recruiting they're at right now compared to what Vanderbilt is, and Vanderbilt's getting up there, don't get me wrong, but right. I just feel all of that amounts to something. And I feel like it's sustained momentum for long enough to where it's still Tennessee.
Because let's look at it this way. Like, Joey Aguilar is going to be gone, right?
Yeah.
Next in line is the guy from Brentwood Academy. I'm forgetting his name.
George McIntyre.
Thank you. Jordan McIntyre. George McIntyre.
George.
Yeah. That, to me, is the same situation Vanderbilt's in as a quarterback situation. Nobody knows the true definition of what McIntyre will be next year. Same thing for Vanderbilt. We don't know what the quarterback situation is going to be. I'm not saying those two positions or those two players in one position is going to dictate the future of this rivalry. But to me, I just have to say they're on the same playing field. I can't say one's better than the other. I really can't.
I'll tell you what this debate reminds me of. It reminds me of when Tennessee finally decided to start playing baseball. And everybody was trying to compare, oh, is 1 year of success, does that mean they're equal? And then obviously Tennessee's kind of sustained it a little bit now. You know, we'll see post-Tony what ends up happening.
Sure.
But it's a similar scenario, I think, because like you don't know if Vandy's going to be able to sustain this. We just don't know yet,
right.
I think, you know. But I think it's a similar scenario for sure.
It's that I feel comfortable about Tennessee sustaining the momentum rather more so than Vanderbilt. And that's not to knock on Vanderbilt. I think they're building something really special there.
Right.
But it's what I know. And I know Tennessee is going to compete year in and year out. This year, we thought Vanderbilt was going to be able to compete. Maybe not on this level, but we thought they were going to be able to build. Tennessee, I know, is going to be able to compete next year. I'm not sure what level Vanderbilt is going to be able to compete at. That's just why I feel Tennessee is the staple right now.
That's fair. Absolutely fair.
615-737-1025. Last call for your texts and phone calls. Our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. When we come back, as we wrap things up, it's a battle. And it's the first time in history, once in a lifetime. Myself versus Christian in Where Are They Now, hosted by Nick Frazier. We'll do that coming up next, right here on the Weekend Huddle on 102.5 The Game. Once in a lifetime, there's a matchup of this magnitude. That day is today. Welcome back in, Weekend Huddle, here on 102.5 The Game. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton, and as we always do on our last segment of the show, we wrap things up with our favorite game, Where Are They Now? Today, for the first time in history, it's a rivalry unlike any other. Myself versus Christian with Nick Frazier behind the helm, which is very rare, unfortunately.
It's a rare thing.
But it's a special time for you.
It's like seeing pigs fly.
Or Bulldogs win. I'm just kidding. Reminder of the rules. It's 5 players/coaches. Your job is to tell us where they are now. First 3 are in North America. Last 2 are anywhere in the world. It's 1 point for league/country. 2 points for specific team. Are we ready?
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's do this thing.
I suppose.
Let's go.
All right. First on the list, I have former Clemson Tiger, college football player, Amari Rodgers.
Oh, God.
Where is Amari Rodgers playing football?
You go first.
Do I have to?
Yes.
I'll say that he is in the USFL playing for the Birmingham Stallions.
Okay.
I'll also go UFL. St. Louis Battlehawks.
Connor gets a point, and we have a ding, ding, ding 3-pointer.
God!
This guy right here. Christian Skelton, 3-pointer.
What a pull.
It's over. The game is over.
What a pull. I cannot believe I just did that.
Wide receiver Amari Rodgers, former Clemson Tiger, plays for the Birmingham Stallions in the UFL, but in the USFL little division. So, 3 points for Christian there. He leads 3-1.
God, the game's over.
Next on the list is former college basketball player. Oh, no. Yeah, college basketball
player.
Never
mind.
Former NBA player as well. Oh, I shouldn't have said that, actually. I can still say
you that.
You can. Wait a minute. I've messed this up already.
Today, Junior.
Because I was going to leave that for the next one. I'll just skip to another one. Excuse me. All right. Continuing.
All right.
Yep. All right. Former college football player. Kind of have a list of them here. Let's see here. No, I'm not going to do that one. Devon Smith. There we go. Where is Devon Smith playing football?
Where did he play college?
Michigan.
Okay.
Okay, I was like, we're not talking about Devontae Smith,
no,
right?
No,
okay.
There's no A in this one.
Okay.
I'll say CFL.
Okay.
Montreal Alouettes.
Okay.
I'll go with the CFL too, and I'll say the Toronto, I don't remember.
Argonauts?
Argonauts. That's what I was looking for.
Both are incorrect, but that's okay. We'll continue. And this has to be a third one from the United States, correct?
Well, where does he play?
I say, we want to know.
Oh, I'm sorry. The UFL. My bad. Yeah.
4?
UFL plays for the Arlington Renegades.
We could tell you haven't done this very
no,
much.
No, I have a bunch of them on my screen.
Be fair, I also forgot that the USFL is a part of the UFL. I forgot that
was
two separate things.
Now two divisions, the XFL division and USFL
and
division.
And I completely forgot about that. So, wow.
Yep. All right. I have a lot of international ones that I'm ready for, but continuing at America.
God, they're all soccer. We're all screwed.
No, they're not. They're even better. Nope. Let's see. Going to the NBA, who? Well, I not say who, but let's go with the player here. I'm not going to go with coach because that is a big giveaway. Where does. Is it? Uh-oh. I'm going to pronounce his name properly. The guy. I'm not going to go to that one. Just don't want to get.
Should we ever let him do this again?
I'm not going to lose my job for this one. Not going to pronounce his name. Let's see.
I'm excited to hear who it is after the show.
Yeah.
Let's if you give him 3 more hours, we may learn.
Yeah. Where is PJ Washington playing basketball right now?
Oh, PJ Washington's in the NBA for the Dallas Mavericks.
Okay.
About to say, I know he's in the NBA. Last I heard was the Charlotte Hornets, but I'll go with the. I will stick with that. Charlotte Hornets.
Okay. Well, 1 point for Christian. That puts him at 4. We have a tie ball game at 4-4. Connor got that.
Don't test my cats, pal.
There we go. So, 4 all. Next is the international spectrum of it all. Spencer Dinwiddie. Where is Spencer Dinwiddie?
Oh, Spencer Dinwiddie. I know he's overseas. Spencer Dinwiddie is in China playing. No, I don't want to do that, actually. I think he's in Spain playing for Real Madrid.
Okay.
I'll say he's in. We'll say he's in France, and I don't know, he's playing for Paris.
Unfortunately, you both are incorrect. He plays for Bayern Munich in Germany.
Ooh, so we were in Europe.
We were
in Europe.
You were.
Okay. It was a soccer team.
Yeah. Let's see. Next on the list, we have guard Tyson Acuff from Detroit, Michigan. Where is Tyson Acuff, 23-year-old basketball star?
His brother
was undrafted in the 2025.
His brother, Darius, plays for Arkansas.
Okay. Former Rutgers guard.
Tyson plays for... I'll say he's in Lithuania for whatever team Luka used to play for.
Okay.
It's going to be a spelling bee moment. Can you say the name one more time, please?
Tyson Acuff.
Tyson.
Last name.
Can you use it in a sentence?
I was about to say, can I get the definition?
A-C-U-F-F.
A-C-U-F-F. Okay. We'll say he's in... We'll say he's in China. I guess for the... Guangdong Tigers is always the go-to. We'll just say that.
No. Connor was close, but it's the Estonian-Latvian Basketball League playing for...
Oh, Latvia!
Playing for the BC Kalev Cramo. So...
Wasn't that where Dr. Doom is from? Latvia?
I think so. I still need to watch Fantastic Four. Wow, I just realized
Well,
that.
He wasn't in it, Brian, so...
Oh, it's okay.
Next on the list, it's international.
It's tiebreaker, pal.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I have next on the list. I have another one.
Well, that's five. Do you know how the tiebreaker works?
Yeah, you have to do the... What, are you going to belittle me on the air?
Well, you started to go to another international. I don't know.
I was trying to correct you because we've got to play the game correctly.
I am the creator of this game. I can overrule what the heck you say. You do know that, right?
Sure.
Yeah, let's not but
I didn't know you created this game.
I did. Thank you.
He created the idea. Jake and I created the game.
Sounds like it was a group effort regardless.
That's fine. You guys can just continue to belittle me. That's fine. All right, continuing. Let's go with an NFL player's path. Played for the Minnesota Vikings. Played for... Let's see. Who else did he play for? Let's go Tennessee Titans. New England Patriots. God, there's so many names or so many teams he played for. There's those three teams. Didn't even think you guys go to a, you know, tie break. Let's go Oakland Raiders and the 49ers.
What's the order?
It goes Vikings, Raiders, Patriots, Vikings, Titans, 49ers.
Okay. I'm going to say it is Titans legend. Nicholas Petit-Frere. Oh, wait, no, it's not.
Well, as soon as I heard Raiders and 49ers, that took Randy Moss out of the running, and that also probably would have been too obvious. Josh Dobbs.
Incorrect. It was Randy Moss. Bummer.
Randy Moss played for the Raiders?
He did.
And the Niners?
Well, yep. We got to get another one.
That's too bad you guys tie.
No, there's no ties in this game. This is stupid European soccer.
I accept the tie. I accept the draw. I'll take a point.
There's no ties. I'm not ending the show until we get another one.
All right. Well, you can go play by yourself, I guess. That's what she said. Appreciate everybody listening today. That's
awesome. No, we're not wrapping up. You get another one.
No, I'm good. I'm done.
Okay. That'll do it for us here on the program. Appreciate everyone involved. For Nick Frazier, for Christian Skelton, my name is Connor Newt. Say it so long. We'll see you later. Stay tuned. Vanderbilt football against Tennessee coming up with pregame at 1. For us, we say goodbye. We'll see you next week. So long, everybody.